Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
And welcome, everybody. Welcome, welcome. We have a terrific lineup for you today. My first guest has covered wars and presidential campaigns. He's investigated human traffickers and been chased by wild elephants. But by far, he says his most challenging assignment involved something much more personal. He's award-winning ABC News anchor Dan Harris, and I'll introduce him in just a moment. In the second half of today's show, we'll be joined by CEO and entrepreneur David Howitt. In the spirit of Joseph Campbell, Howitt's new book takes readers on a hero's journey for the 21st century. Howitt says life is not about either or, it's about the power of and, about integrating myth, science, spirituality, and business. And maybe to prove a point, he describes himself as a man who likes green smoothies in the morning and tequila at night. But first, I'm very pleased to welcome Dan Harris to the show. He's the co-anchor of ABC News Nightline and co-anchor for the weekend edition of Good Morning America. He regularly contributes stories on ABC for shows including 2020, World News with Diane Sawyer, and Good Morning America. Harris has reported from around the world covering wars in Afghanistan, Israel, Palestine, and Iraq, and produced investigative reports in Haiti, Cambodia, and the Congo. He's been with ABC News for about 13 years and received Murrow and Emmy Awards for his reporting. He's written a new book. It's called 10% Happier, How I Tamed the Voice in My Head, Reduced Stress Without Losing My Edge, and Found Self-Help That Actually Works, a True Story. Dan Harris, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Well, your new book tells the story of an accidental odyssey that began after you had a panic attack while you were reading the news live on air. But let's go back a few years. You started your career in local news outlets in Boston and Maine. Was primetime TV always a goal for you?
Yeah, I always wanted to make it to the network, as we used to say back in the day. I didn't think it was going to happen as quickly as it did for me. I got to ABC News when I was 28. I always thought it would take longer because I looked really, really young. In fact, I looked sort of barely post-pubescent. but I certainly wanted to go all the way.
Right. And from reading your book, it seems that you've always been a little hyper. You've always had that very active voice in your head. But for the most part, you said you felt it worked for you. It pushed you to work harder and keep going and strive for success.
Yeah, I mean, I want to be clear. When I say the term voice in the head, I'm not talking about schizophrenia. I'm saying this inner narrator that we all have,
right,
that is usually like the first thing we hear when we wake up in the morning, and it's yammering at us all day long. And it can be really good. It can be generous, funny. It can drive us to succeed. But a lot of the time, it's negative, self-referential, comparing ourselves to other people. Casting forward into an idealized future and remembering the past instead of focusing on what's happening right now. So it's a mixed blessing, and often the blessing part is very small.
Right. And you say that with this book you gave us, as you call it, exclusive access to the voice in your head, which we all have, as you said. Why did you decide to write about this journey? Because you're very, very honest in here. There's a lot of very personal information in here.
Yeah, a lot of people have been surprised about how candid I decided to be in the book, and I knew it was a risk, and I won't lie to you. I mean, I freaked out about it several times.
What did the voice in the head say?
Yeah, the voice in the head said, you're going to ruin your career. And I actually really seriously contemplated pulling publications shortly before the book came out. I went to Diane Sawyer to talk to her about it, and she and my ultimate boss, Ben Sherwood, the president of ABC News, both encouraged me to plow ahead and push the book out. The reason why I really wanted to do it is that I ended up, as a result of this very weird journey in the book, stumbling on something that really helped me in my life, and something that has a big PR problem, and that's meditation. I think I always thought meditation was just for weirdos, for people who, lived in a yurt or we're deeply into aromatherapy.
Mm-hmm.
As it turns out, though, it's scientifically tested and really simple brain exercise. It doesn't require joining any group, paying any fees. And so I thought if I could speak honestly in a way that is different than meditation has been discussed for years, that I could actually do some good.
Yeah, I agree. I think out here in Seattle, many people are very familiar with meditation, maybe on the West Coast more so than the East or the middle of the country. But, you know, there's still a lot of skepticism out there. And I think until you've experienced it personally, it's hard to believe the benefits that can come from that. So let's talk a little bit about what started all this. I know you were working, you know, long hours. You're in an incredibly competitive field and you had this panic attack on air, which you talk about very frankly. It's all over YouTube, let's face it now, right? But
yeah.
You seem to handle it very well and you seem to, you know, come out, you passed it off. But talk to us a little bit about that whole experience.
So yeah, I was on Good Morning America in June of 2004, and I was filling in as what's called the news reader. My job was to read a series of headlines at the top of each hour at 7 o'clock in the morning and 8 o'clock in the morning. And at 7 o'clock, the co-anchors of the show, Charlie Gibson and Diane Sawyer, tossed it over to me to start my little newscast. And out of nowhere, I was just hit with this bolt of fear. My lungs seized up. I couldn't breathe. My heart was racing. My palms were sweating. My mouth dried up. And I basically just had to quit right in the middle, which is something I had never done before. And it was very, very embarrassing.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a backstory, which is that, you know, having arrived at ABC News in the year 2000, 4 years earlier, my way of coping with the fact that I was green was to become a workaholic. And I really threw myself into the job. And after 9/11, I raised my hand to go overseas for a long time. I covered wars in Afghanistan and Iraq and the Middle East. And I came home for a particularly long stretch of that in 2003, and I got depressed. And I did a very dumb thing, which is that I self-medicated with recreational drugs. And I later learned after the panic attack that even though I wasn't using the drugs when I was working, and I definitely wasn't using when I was on the air, it raises the level of adrenaline in your brain and primed me to have the panic attack.
Right.
And so I was sitting there in my doctor's office when he was explaining all this to me, and I realized what a moron I'd been, this kind of cascading series of dumb decisions that I'd made. And that set me off on this journey to kind of, you know, be a little smarter.
Right. So I read that what a big turning point for you, because we all have these major turning points in our life, throughout our lives. But one of the turning points for you was when you started working under Peter Jennings. And he assigned you the religion beat, which you said you weren't particularly thrilled about, but it led you down a different path. So tell us about that turning point, if you would.
Right. There's a sort of interesting confluence of events. So around the time that I realized that I had been a moron in my personal life, I had also been assigned to cover religion by my mentor, Peter Jennings. And you're right, I didn't want to do it. I was raised by a pair of scientists in Boston, and a very secular environment. I had a bar mitzvah, but that was pretty much for the money. And so this just was not my thing.
Right.
But Peter was insistent that I do this, so I did it. And I made a lot of friends in religious circles and learned a lot of, you know, had my mind opened in a lot of ways. That said, none of the faith that I encountered really spoke to me personally until I got turned on to this self-help book by a guy named Eckhart Tolle, who you may have heard of.
Right.
He lives not far away from you. He's up in Vancouver. And so you mentioned you've heard of him. Anyway, he was the first person I had heard talk about the voice in the head, that we have this inner narrator that, you know, that we're so enthralled by this conversation we're having with ourselves that we don't even notice that it's happening at all. And so I got really interested in Eckhart Tolle, but I also realized that he didn't have any actionable advice. And also, he also says a lot of things that are pseudoscientific and grandiose and
mm-hmm.
just plain weird.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of set me off on the next part of the journey.
And so it took you a while to connect with something that really did make sense with you. But let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll dig into that and talk some more about what did make sense to you and what actually worked for you. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, and my guest is ABC's Dan Harris. His new book is called 10% Happier, How I Tamed the Voice in My Head, Reduced Stress Without Losing My Edge, and Found Self-Help That Actually Works. We'll be right back.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
OMG! Grammar abuse is no LOL! Hire a copywriter today and make sure your business communications rise above the crowd and deliver the results you need. Call 800-495-7617 today. BTW, IMHO, copywriters rule. Call 800-495-7617. BFN!
Let's see if I guess that... This just isn't working.
Knowing you have a great idea for a book is one thing, writing it another. So what's stopping you? Maybe you can't find time. Maybe you don't know where to begin. Maybe you wrote a couple of chapters, then disappeared down a rabbit hole. Or maybe you'd rather someone else write it for you. Partnering with the right coach or ghostwriter can make all the difference between talking about your book and finishing your book. As an award-winning writer and strategic consultant, Vicki St. Clair's storytelling credits span from business, health, self-help, and memoir to New York Times and USA Today best-selling anthologies. Vicki partners with people just like you at the exact level you need, whether you need a little encouragement, editorial guidance, or full-blown ghostwriting and consulting services. If you're serious about telling the story you know is inside you, stop procrastinating. Let's get your story down on paper. Contact Vicki today. Email Vicki at VickiSt.Clair.com or call 1-800-495-7617. See more about Vicki and her work at VickiSt.Clair.com.
Oh, yeah, that could work.
Hi, this is Vicki St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772. Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Listen to podcasts of past shows at conversationslive.net.
Feed your mind and your body and spirit will follow. Alternative Talk, 1150.
And welcome back, everybody. We are talking in this segment with award-winning ABC News anchor Dan Harris. And his new book is called 10% Happier. It's all about how he tamed the voice in his head, that voice that we all have, that inner narrator, which sometimes doesn't do us any good at all. But Dan, another turning point came for you when your wife handed you a book to read. So tell us a little bit about that, if you would.
Yeah, so she had listened to me yammer on about my interest in and frustration with Eckhart Tolle and various self-help gurus who talked about the voice in the head, and but also, you know, promised like you could get anything you want through the power of positive thinking and other, you know, patently wrong claims like that. So one night she said, you know, you've been talking about this stuff, but it reminds me of this book that I read. It might be helpful to you. And she handed me this book by a guy named Dr. Mark Epstein, who is a psychiatrist here in New York City, and he's also a Buddhist. And he writes books about the overlap between Freudian analysis and Buddhism. I had no prior exposure to Buddhism, and as soon as I cracked open Dr. Epstein's book, I realized that all the smart stuff that Eckhart Tolle said, to the extent that he says anything smart, was pretty much Buddhism. Mm-hmm. Buddha was the guy who came up with this diagnosis of the human condition, that we have this mind that's jumping around all over the place, never in the present moment, always leaping forward into the future, remembering the past, et cetera, et cetera. And Dr. Epstein, who had a lot of credibility in my eyes because he's a doctor, and both my parents are doctors and my wife's a doctor, had a recommendation for how to tame the monkey mind. My problem at this point was what he was recommending sounded awful to me, which was meditation.
And why did it sound so awful to you? I know you had a distaste, you say in the book, for anything to do with hippies, and you thought this was all about being a hippie.
Yeah, I thought meditation is a huge PR problem. I mean, I know we're in Seattle right now, where people may be a little bit open minded, but even if you don't, as I did, labor under the delusion that meditation is only for people who, are hippies or live in a yurt or whatever, you probably are likely to suspect that even if it's good for you, it's too hard for you. It involves, quote-unquote, clearing the mind, et cetera, et cetera. So there are all these misconceptions about meditation out there, and I bought into all of them. As it turns out, I was wrong about all of it, and I decided to give it a shot, and it's made a real difference in my life.
Right. And one of the things that you recommend to everybody, and you do say, I'm not an expert on this, but you ran your book and the tips you give in there by experts, but you say just do 5 minutes a day. And I think that's great advice. That's actually what I have to do with my workout every day because I don't enjoy it. I say I'll do 5 minutes and then I end up going 10, to 30 or whatever. But tell us why you say just 5 minutes.
Well, I think that the workout analogy is good because this is exercise for your brain. It is not, you're not commuting with the universe. You're not floating off into endless bliss or cosmic goo. It really is. It requires a lot of grit. What you're trying to do is focus on one thing. Usually it's your breath. You're just trying to feel your breath coming in and going out. And then every time your mind wanders, which it will a million times, you're going to catch it wandering and return your attention to the breath. And every time you do that, you're breaking this lifelong habit we have of walking around in a daydream of anticipation and memory. I do think the exercise analogy is really good. And I also think 5 minutes a day is enough to get you started because it will change the relationship you have with the voice in your head, the voice that, has you putting your hand in the fridge when you're not hungry or losing your temper when you don't really need to, or checking your email when your kids are trying to talk to you. I think you should tell yourself you're going to do 5 minutes and you're never going to do any more. And maybe it'll grow, maybe it won't. But the dailiness of it, the daily collision with the zoo of your mind is likely to give you a leg up the next time the voice in your head gives you a stupid suggestion.
Right, right. And so many people will say, oh, my mind's much too active or I'm much too busy. But what they're really saying is, I have no control or power over my time. And just everybody, as you say, frequently has just 5 minutes a day.
Yeah, I don't care how. I mean, I'm extremely busy, and I don't care if you have 17 kids and four jobs. You definitely have 5 minutes right before you go to bed, when you pull in the driveway at home, before you walk into the house. There's definitely 5 minutes, and at the very least, you can find 2 minutes. I just think that the daily discipline of holding the live fish of your mind in your hand will really give you perspective on your life, on this voice in your head that is yanking you around so much. I think it can make a huge difference.
Right. And the scientific studies, of course, support this. Neuroscience has made great advances on this and can measure the impact of how it affects the brain. And, I mean, we all know it improves focus, lowers blood pressure. I heard you talking with Dr. Oz. He even said it can help with psoriasis because it calms the immune system, irritable bowel syndrome, binge eating. And the interesting thing, of course, is that, once the brain starts to feel good, it wants more of it.
Yeah, the radical notion here is that we have always subconsciously, I think, assumed that our happiness is dependent upon external things like the quality of our childhood. Did we marry well? Are we making enough money? How's our health? In fact, what meditation suggests or proposes is the notion that happiness can be self-generated, that it's a skill, that you can train your mind just body in the gym.
Mm-hmm.
And that this exercise of catching your mind wandering and bringing it back to whatever you're focusing on, that's a bicep curl for your brain. And you can learn how to stop the mind wandering and stop getting yanked around by its noxious suggestions. And it can, as I keep saying, make a big difference. Again, it's not going to solve all of your problems. It's not going to make you taller or wealthy, but it will make you happier.
Right. And I want to talk just a little about when you were getting into this. You had a new boss, Ben Sherwood, 2011 this was, and you said you spent months adrift, just not really reaching at work. And he told you he said, up your game, Dan, stop being so zen. So talk to us about that, because when you talked with your mentor, he said you'd fallen into the pitfalls that some people do with meditation.
Yeah, there is a pitfall that you can fall into with meditation. It's a misapplication, but it's possible to get passive. To misread meditation, where you become complacent or resigned, let people push you around, that is not what meditation is designed to do. What meditation is designed to do is help you to see things clearly so that you can, and this is a cliche, but one of the few cliches I like, respond instead of react to things.
Mm-hmm.
We spend much of our lives in this automatic pilot where we're just kind of responding habitually and automatically to stimuli like anger or frustration. But through meditation, you learn how to respond wisely. And there's a reason why you're seeing executives, Marines, soldiers, athletes, artists, scientists adopting this ancient and often falsely considered strange practice, because it helps you focus and helps you make smarter, less emotional decisions.
Right. What surprised you most when you were doing your research, Dan?
What surprised me most was my ability to change, frankly. I mean, it's not like my life's a nonstop parade of unicorns and rainbows. It's just that, there's a certain amount of suffering inherent in life, especially if you want to achieve something. It's hard if you're ambitious. And I'm not just talking about career. I'm talking about parenting, volunteer work, whatever it is you're doing. To be great at whatever you're doing, it requires a certain amount of suffering. Even if you don't care about being great, just being alive requires a certain amount of suffering. But we tend to make it worse for ourselves than it needs to be. And what I found is I'm much better now at figuring out how much worrying I need to do in order to get done what I need to accomplish, and then cutting it off when it's no longer useful. I talk about this in the book, but the 17th time that I'm running through all the awful consequences of missing my flight to wherever I've got to go for my next story, maybe on the 17th time I can ask myself, is this useful? Do I need to keep worrying about this?
Mm-hmm.
And learning how to harness what I call constructive anguish and to chop off useless rumination has really made a big difference.
Mm. Well, I know that your wife used to call you Hurricane Harris. What does she call you now today?
There's a reason why I call the book 10% Happier. If she was on the line right now, she would lecture you on the 90% moron that I continue to be. So there are days where I am still Hurricane Harris in her view.
and 10% Happier, really quickly, tell us why you called it that.
Two reasons. One, to counter program against the baloney that you hear from self-help gurus who say that you can solve all of your problems through positive thinking, which just isn't true. And the second is that it just grew out of conversations I had with people at my office who would ask me very skeptically, why are you meditating? What happened to you? And I started answering, oh, because it makes me 10% happier. And I found that the look on their face would transform from scorn to genuine interest.
Well, Dan Harris, I appreciate you being with us today. I know that our listeners can find you on Nightline. Tell us where they can find you.
Yeah, I'm on Nightline. I'm on the weekend edition of Good Morning America. I'm where else am I? I'm all over ABC News whenever they'll have me. And And the book's available in fine bookstores everywhere.
Thank you so much for being with us. And of course, the book is called 10% Happier, How I Tamed the Voice in My Head, Reduced Stress Without Losing My Edge, and Found Self-Help That Actually Works, a true story. And Dan Harris. And I loved your book, Dan. Thanks so much.
Thanks very much. Really appreciate it.
And please do stay with us. When we come back, we'll be joined by David Howitt. His book is called Heed Your Call, and we're going to talk about the hero's journey. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Rings out loud and clear. Okay, sees your peace of mind. 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 This is Meryl Streep. Over the years, I have played some characters you could call controlling, but the truth is, there's so much in life we can't control. But here's something we can. Colorectal cancer. It affects men and women, and it's the second leading cancer killer in the U.S., which is astounding, considering it's almost entirely preventable. Here's how. Most colon cancers start as polyps, and screening helps find polyps so they can be removed before they even turn into cancer. Screening also finds this cancer early, when treatment works best. For me, screening was simple and quick. It was no big deal, except for the huge sense of relief you feel afterwards. There are several tests that you can choose from. If you're 50 or older, you should talk to your doctor. Decide which one's right for you. Take control. Do everything you can to prevent colon cancer. Screening saves lives. It could really save your life. For more information, call 1-800-CDC-INFO.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
This is Martha Norwalk. Every Sunday morning, beginning at 9 a.m., thanks in part to New Pro Supplements, we cover the world of animals. This week, April 26th, it's an encore presentation of Animal World. Listen in to hear Jude and Paul Ponton from Whispering Dragon work their harmonic and energy-shifting magic in remote sessions with callers from around the world. With callers from Germany, North Carolina, Oregon, and Washington, they work with animals, humans, and clearing spaces. Martha Norwalk's Animal World, Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair discusses issues that are important to you, like good health and well-being, finding a new job and building your business, overcoming life's big challenges and making sense out of chaos, and living with passion and joy. Join us Mondays at noon Pacific for Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. See conversationslive.net for show schedule and guest information.
Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772. Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Follow me on Twitter at Vicky St. Clair.
On the AM band at 1150 and on the FM HD band at 98.9 HD3. Alternative Talk 1150.
And welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. And today's show is all about odysseys, personal and otherwise. And my next guest is David M. Howitt. He's the founder and CEO of Merriweather Group. He's an inspiring thought leader, accomplished entrepreneur, and has more than 20 years of experience providing financial, strategic, and brand counsel to early stage and Fortune 100 companies. He's known for the unique ability to integrate vision and growth strategies with mission and purpose, and has provided guidance to Oregon Chai, Stumptown Coffee, Pendleton, Adidas, and many other companies. His new book is called Heed Your Call, Integrating Myth, Science, Spirituality, and Business. David Howitt, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Vicky. Thanks for having me.
Well, I'm pleased to have you, and as I said during the break, loved the book, a great follow-on to Dan Harris's book, 10% Happier, that we just were talking about. And I want to just start with integration, because I was telling you that this landed on my desk at the right time, because this year for me is about integration. I felt too many things were too compartmentalized. And you believe in the power of and. So talk to us a little bit about that. I read in the book that you like your green smoothies in the morning and you like your tequila at night. It doesn't have to be an either-or situation.
Right. Thanks. Yeah, thanks, Vicky. And, you know, that is that point was used to sort of demonstrate the concept. But, yeah, I mean, what I'm trying to say in Heed Your Call, and you're right, it does flow really well from Dan's interview, Dan Harris's interview, is that, you know, we can have one foot in the world of purpose and meaning, empathy, intuition, you know, perhaps a spiritual practice, and another foot in the camp of commerce. You know, my life, my experience, and what I've written about in Heed Your Call, I think tries to create a bridge between the two. That really, when you embrace and, when you live from a place of, yeah, I set my alarm clock, I balance my checkbook, you know, I go into the office, I get it done every day, and I also, you know, tap into my intuition, which we all have, my empathy and ability to understand those around me, and my creative, sort of more artistic side, that's really where the magic happens.
Right, right. And you talk of, you follow the spirit of Joseph Campbell's hero's journey. Again, I'm a huge fan of Joseph Campbell's work, and I know you are. But tell us a little bit about what his work has meant to you and how you've carried that forward into your work.
Yeah, so Vicky, I read, like, you know, maybe some of your listeners, one of Joseph Campbell's seminal works in college, The Hero with a Thousand Faces. And at the time, I thought, wow, what a cool book. You know, there's something really interesting about this concept. But it wasn't until, you know, really the last 5 years that, you know, it started to really, I guess, kind of come back into my consciousness. And so I went back and reread the book. And as many of your listeners probably know, you know, Joseph Campbell was the foremost authority on mythology. And his thesis was that myths are something more than just great stories. They're more than just a collection of really neat, fun-to-read stories, but really what they are is they are the tough issues, the challenges we all face, the questions we all, you know, ponder, contextualized in story and in archetypes. And so his point was we can use mythology as a guide, as a roadmap, if you will, to help us navigate life. And in telling us this, he pointed to one myth in particular that has been central to all time, all geography, all spiritual practices, all religions. And, you know, if you stop and think about that, that's pretty powerful. That, you know, you could be an Inuit, Eskimo, or an Aboriginal Australian, and you would have this myth in your culture. And that myth, the hero's journey, is really formulaic. It always follows this very formulaic trajectory. And that trajectory and myth is really the basis of things like Star Wars, Avatar, The Wizard of Oz, most of the great movies, books, and stories. You know, there's an interesting YouTube video where George Lucas is sitting with Joseph Campbell and says, hey, you know, the reason Star Wars did what it did in the world wasn't because of the acting or animation. It was because I told the hero's journey, and it, you know, tapped into the collective in a major way.
Yeah.
So really, in writing Heed Your Call and in the work I've done and my firm, the Merriweather Group, really focuses on, we took that hero's journey, that trajectory, and overlaid it against the life of the entrepreneur or the businessman, and looked at it and sort of applied our experience as having been entrepreneurs and also having guided, accelerated, and invested in other entrepreneurs and had one of those moments where you're like, whoa, you know, this is really, really spot on and really informative. And so the book, Heed Your Call, illustrates in some ways each of our own unique hero's journey and what we can sort of expect and understand in terms of a roadmap as to how we go about that journey. And then it articulates 11 constructs that I've used and that I've seen used by others on their journeys to create abundance and meaning.
Right. And tell us how this has impacted your business, your life.
Yeah, so, you know, I don't want to sound overly dramatic, but it has affected my business and my life in really profound ways. I mean, firstly, you know, understanding and embracing this notion of the power of and, that I don't have to make a choice between being successful and having an authentic, purposeful life, that they can actually live together. they can coexist and really actually support one another. That has been material for me, and it's been something that we've used with our clients with really amazing success. And then on the hero's journey, you know, for me, it allows me to look at my life and where I am and say, you know, am I stuck in the known world? Am I now, you know, in the abyss? Am I on my path of transformation, or am I reaching my defining moment? And then understand which of the constructs that I've outlined in Heed Your Call might be available to me at any time. And then, you know, just following on from, again, your prior discussion with Dan, you know, I want the listener to really hear. I mean, I'm a business person. You know, I enjoy commerce. I've had great fortune starting, running, growing companies, working for large brands. And I also want to have a life with a lot of meaning and purpose. And so this is not sort of just woo-woo theory. This is stuff that, you know, we drive into our business practices every day with real-world sort of results.
Right, right. And you had maybe your first hero's journey when you spent 20 years of your life preparing to become an attorney, and
yeah.
And you get this job and you're an attorney, you're down in Portland, Oregon, and thinking what? I have to
yeah.
share this with listeners. Your life changed because of a tube of squeezed out preparation H.
So. Yeah, you know, you're right. And so, you know, what I want to say here is I'm no different than any listener here today or anyone else. I mean, we are all born into our own individual, what I call known worlds, right? So, you know, for me, I was born into my known world, which was a culturally Jewish home in an upper middle class conservative Midwestern town. And in my life, you know, you were just sort of, it was known you would either become a lawyer or a doctor or an executive, and that's the path, right? And so I bought into that, I subscribed to that, and I went forward from my known world, accepting that as my path, as my purpose, as the Buddhists would say, my dharma. And I excelled. You know, I did well in school. I went on to college and did well. I took all the classes I was supposed to take, did the internships, built the resume, got into law school, did well, and ended up with, you know, what I thought would be my, you know, defining moment. I got a job at a prestigious law firm, the big oak desk, the assistant, the business card. And suddenly I realized, you know, I was miserable.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, it was shocking. You know, I sort of like looked up and thought, wait a minute, you know, my life has been in service to someone else's ideals of what and who I should be. And suddenly I'm here. Everything I've done has gotten me here. And this feels really wrong. It feels wrong in my body. You know, I have anxiety, my stomach hurts, you know, I'm not sleeping well. It feels wrong in my throat, in my heart. And, you know, is this what life is? Am I just going to mail it in and do this? Do I have to suffer through this? Because, you know, is this what life is?
As many people feel.
As many, many people feel. And, you know, as a quick sidebar, you know, when doing the research for Heed Your Call, I interviewed a number of end-of-care life givers, primarily mm-hmm. through hospice. And the single biggest comment that hospice workers receive when people are reaching their final days is, you know, I live my life in service to someone else's ideas of who I should be. I didn't take a shot. I didn't live my passion, my dream. I mailed it in. I lived in an authentic life, and I played it safe. And I think a lot of us find ourselves at that place in our lives. You know, maybe we're saying, you know, I've got the job. I've got the spouse or the family or the home or the cars, the things that everyone told me were going to make me happy. But why is it that I still feel disconnected, sad, lonely? Why do I have to reach for my iPhone, you know, every 5 minutes to distract myself from that feeling that wells up inside myself? And I think a lot of us spend an incredible amount of energy trying to quiet that voice inside of us that says there's something more, you know, that there's something different where you can be aligned with your heroic purpose, with your dharma. We're scared by that. And so for me, you know, I had reached a point in my path where it was just untenable not to listen to that voice anymore. And for those that I hope are able or willing to pick up Heed Your Call, they'll get to read the story that you allude to with the preparation H-tube. But really, you know, that was the start of my life in a way. You know, that's where I finally said, I'm going to surrender and let go. And yes, I may really disappoint my family. I may let down the college professors and law school professors who wrote me letters of recommendation. And I may disappoint my hometown community and all those things that ego was screaming at me. But it no longer was tenable. And so I let go. And when I let go, my life finally actually started to really become. And surprisingly, all those people I thought I was letting down simply said, good for you. That's awesome. You know, great for you for getting in alignment with your happiness.
Right.
So these are stories we tell ourselves.
Right. And Dan Harris had mentioned when I was talking with him earlier that letting go doesn't mean going soft, which was something that he'd had to struggle with. And I think that's another thing that people tend to sometimes hold on to things because they're afraid of going soft or of losing.
Correct. And I think we often hear the term surrender in our minds and we think of it in terms of giving up, of being weak, of defeat. And really, you know, if you study the term and the concept through psychology and if you look at physics, I mean, you know, really surrender, letting go is flow. You know, the Aikido master in martial arts is certainly not weak, but the Aikido master will surrender to the other person's energy and allowing them to sort of win or to move forward.
Right.
So it's about embracing flow, about embracing ease and having to, you know, be okay with a little bit of trust. I mean, there's this great quote that when you feel yourself falling, jump.
Right, right. There's a great story in the book. I'm going to ask you to share that when we come back. We're going to take a very quick break, but I think it illustrates this what we've just been talking about perfectly. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, and my guest is David M. Howitt. His book is called Heed Your Call, Integrating Myth, Science, Spirituality, and Business. Please stay with us. We'll be right back.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
Do something different with your spare time. Give baby animals and Paws a fresh start. With the assistance of caring volunteers, Paws helps hundreds of orphaned and sick kittens and puppies each year. Join us and save lives. Become a Paws foster care volunteer. For more information, visit paws.org or 425-787-2500. Paws.org or 425-787-2500.
Let's see if I guess that this just isn't working.
Knowing you have a great idea for a book is one thing, writing it another. So what's stopping you? Maybe you can't find time. Maybe you don't know where to begin. Maybe you wrote a couple of chapters, then disappeared down a rabbit hole. Or maybe you'd rather someone else write it for you. Partnering with the right coach or ghostwriter can make all the difference between talking about your book and finishing your book. As an award-winning writer and strategic consultant, Vicki St. Clair's storytelling credits span from business, health, self-help, and memoir to New York Times and USA Today best-selling anthologies. Vicki partners with people just like you at the exact level you need, whether you need a little encouragement, editorial guidance, or full-blown ghostwriting and consulting services. If you're serious about telling the story you know is inside you, stop procrastinating. Let's get your story down on paper. Contact Vicki today. Email Vicki at VickiSt.Clair.com or call 1-800-495-7617. See more about Vicki and her work at VickiSt.Clair.com.
Oh, yeah, that could work.
You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Making a difference, one word at a time.
Negativity and fear, two staples of talk radio. Well, we figured we'd try something different. Alternative Talk 1150.
We'll drive them away. We can beat them just for one day. We can be heroes just for one day.
And welcome back, everyone. We are talking with David M. Howitt. His book is called Heed Your Call, Integrating Myth, Science, Spirituality, and Business. And David is the founder and CEO of Merriweather Group. He's known as a thought leader and accomplished entrepreneur with more than 20 years of experience. And we're pleased to have him here. So, David, we were talking before the break about trust, about surrender, about flow. And I said that I think there was a perfect story in your book which embraced all of those attributes. So you met your wife. Tell us about that situation when you met your wife.
Yeah. So, you know, I think for most of us, we have those moments in our life, maybe we call them serendipity or synchronicity, where, you know, things just seem to kind of come together, where, you know, your heart's desire, your intentions, whatever language you want to use, you're able to sort of manifest them or make them happen. And so, you know, here I was, you know, kind of getting out of college and really feeling like I was ready to start to make a shift in my life away from my known world and start to embrace and think about what else might exist. And, you know, whether that be a physical location or people or situations, that was opening myself up to meeting that and those things. And so I took a bike trip with some buddies to Telluride, Colorado. And for those of you who haven't been, you know, it's in the San Juan Mountains. It's absolutely spectacular. Just beautiful peaks and blue skies. And, you know, from a guy who had spent most of his life in the Midwest, it was really an incredible moment to kind of be in that environment. And really, again, opened my heart and opened my soul to possibilities. And it was on that trip that I bumped into this, you know, long-haired, blonde, hippie, beautiful girl who was happened to be visiting Telluride as well. And we connected, exchanged, you know, some words and sort of bumped into each other periodically during the week I was in Telluride, and then exchanged addresses. This was kind of pre-email and pre-cell phone, dating myself a little.
Right.
And wrote letters for the next year. I went back to Chicago and worked for a year post-college prior to going to law school. And then the next summer agreed, you know, that we would, you know, try to see each other again in Telluride. I was making my way out to Portland for law school, and that next summer we connected again in Telluride, only this time, you know, I was out jogging on a trail, like way back in the middle of the wilderness, and I turned the corner, and there was Heather coming down the trail on her mountain bike, you know, really, really remote, really, you know, unbelievable that we could kind of be on the same trail at the same time. We hadn't spoken by phone in nearly a year. There had just been, you know, some letters written back and forth. And, you know, I told her I was moving out to Portland, Oregon to go to law school. And she said, no way, I'm from Portland. And, you know, that led to us connecting and to starting to date, which then led to us starting Oregon Chai, you know, a company that she had really, I would say, dreamt of and envisioned in her mind and soul, and that I was able to help her with some support and some know-how around the business side to manifest, which really in many ways is the basis for a lot of Heed Your Call, that and several other businesses we've worked with, where we kind of came together and started a little company in our kitchen, which we grew to, you know, a business of about $40 million in revenue.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe more importantly, a company that was truly one of the first certified organic and certified fair trade businesses and really built a culture and a relationship with its consumer. So Heed Your Call talks about not only, you know, the serendipity and synchronicities of meeting Heather and how each of us can attune ourselves to those possibilities in our lives, those people, places, events, and opportunities that have the ability to align us with our deepest purpose. It also speaks to then, utilizing and harnessing that in our lives to drive commerce and to drive abundance and to drive, you know, financial success.
Right. And you later sold that company 10 years later for $75 million.
That's right.
So whatever you were doing was working.
And, you know, what I also want to say to your listeners is it's not just us, right? I mean, I'm a skeptical, you know, legal mind, and so I wasn't going to write a book until I felt like I actually had something that would be of value to someone else. And, you know, it was only after I was able to really see these constructs used in multiple businesses, many companies, that I finally reached a place of saying, you know, this is tested. I mean, this is real stuff, and this can be accessed and used by anybody. You don't have to quit your job. You don't have to necessarily, you know, go shift 180 degrees. You can make slight adjustments in your life and really get more in alignment with your purpose and what brings you joy.
Right.
And in doing so, you know, really create meaningful difference for yourself.
Right. And I wanted to talk a little bit about one of the chapters in the book called Accepting Our Duality. And maybe this is in alignment with the power of and versus either or.
Mm-hmm.
You say, let's use Bill Clinton because it's a perfect example. And you
right.
use that
it
in
is.
The book. You say he's duality incarnate.
Yes.
He's arguably one of the most articulate and talented men to have ever been president, but his behavior by our societal standards is quite controversial.
Yes.
Talk to us about accepting our duality.
So I think each of us is both a light and a shadow. I mean, as a matter of physics, when the sun shines on something, you're going to have this beautiful, bright sun, and it's going to cast a shadow, right? So each of us has this component that is able to bring beauty and light and aspirations and connection and love into the world. And we, you know, we equally also have a part of us that is maybe more of the shadow, you know, could be argumentative, could be a trickster, could be sullen or negative mind, you know. But what's important, I believe, is that we embrace both sides, the light and the shadow, because they're both teachers and they're both necessary. Some of the greatest guides and mentors we can meet in our lives are those people who live more from a place of shadow, or at least they live from shadow as it relates to us. So my grandfather, and I write about this in my book, had this thing he would say to me where he would say, you know, when there's someone in your life who maybe you have a real challenge with or is causing you a lot of hardship, don't say to yourself, why is this happening to me? Say, why is this happening for me? And use it as an opportunity to grow. You know, Carlos Castaneda, in his great books, writes a lot about the tyrant that each of us might face in our life, or tyrants, and that we should give reverence for them because they enable us to grow. Well, that's external and internal. We all can get in touch with the shadow sides we possess, and instead of trying to banish it or push it down or punish it, we can learn from it. We can ask, we can cozy up to that shadow and say, you know, what are you feeling right now and why? And lean into it a little bit, get to know it, and learn from it. And in doing so, we become wholer, fuller people.
Right, right. And interesting, you mentioned your grandfather there, because what an attitude, because he was abandoned when he was 7 or 8 by his mother. He had no
yes.
family. So he certainly evolved from that situation.
That's absolutely true.
We're right at the end of our segment. A final thought you'd like to leave our listeners with, David?
Yeah, I would just say, you know, I really am hopeful that your listeners will pick up the book, give it a read. I'm very open to feedback. I can be found on Facebook under Heed Your Call. We also have heedyourcall.com, and then my firm, the Meriwethergroup.com. I really feel that this book can help be a bridge for those of us who are in a place where we want to have financial security and abundance, but we also would like to feel connected and happy and loved and seen. And I really believe from my experience and those that I've had the great opportunity to work with, that this book can provide tools for folks to help them on their path.
Yeah, and I would 100% agree with that. As you can imagine, I read a ton of books, review even more material, And this is a book that I am keeping myself. It is called Heed Your Call, Integrating Myth, Science, Spirituality and Business. And David M. Howitt is the author and has been my guest. Thanks, David.
Thank you so much, Vicky.
And please join us next Monday. We'll have an all-new live show coming up. And if you have feedback or comments on today's show or need to get hold of today's guests and didn't catch the information, you can reach me at 800-495-7617, 800-495-7617, or info@conversationslive.net. You can also find me hanging out on Twitter at Vicky St. Clair and on Facebook at Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Hey, thanks so much for being with us today. We'll see you next week. Until then, live well, live strong. Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.